afternoon, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. This is Carol Mileta from Team Radio Baltimore, bringing you Parenting 411, where we share information parents need from sources they can trust. And you have the good fortune of tuning in to our last installment of Countdown to College. And so today's topic is Watch 'em Fly, Sending Your Children Off to Create the Future. And the reason I have entitled it Create the Future as opposed to Their Future is that when they go to college, certainly they are building a career and a life for themselves and ultimately their future. But also what they do in creating their own lives has a tremendous impact on the rest of us, what they're able to do, what they stand for. And so it's very important. We're doing very important work as parents, preparing them to go out, not only to succeed for themselves on their own terms, but also to make a difference to the rest of the world. And so I have some people here, of course, that are going to talk with us about that. I have Dr. Linda McGee, who is a clinical psychologist with McGee and Associates in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I also have Amelia Truitt, who is founder of True Partner Coaching. And so she does a lot of work with people as a life coach, helping them to navigate different transitions. And certainly sending off your child to college is a major life transition. And then we will also have a college student, a current college student, weighing in, Miss Saria Settles. And she is a sophomore at St. Augustine's University down in North Carolina. So I'm really looking forward to this. We also, during the course of our conversation, will make sure that parents can walk away with some tips for what they can do to make this transition easier, what students can do to make it make things smoother for them, not only in relationship to their parents, but also once they're on campus. And then I also want to make sure that I talk a little bit about what parents can do in the earlier years. You know, your child might be in elementary school, middle school, but it really is not too early to start instilling skills and values in them that will really serve them well at this point and will actually make the transition easier for both of you. You will feel more comfortable sending them off to college because you know that they're just certain, there's a certain foundation that you have laid and that they will be on solid ground when they go to college. So first up, I'd like to introduce you to Amelia Truitt. As I said, she is founder of True Partner Coaching, and it is her job to help people take a look at their lives and just see how they can make the next move out of various situations, and I'll let her describe those. And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to 1010 WOLB Baltimore. That's 1010 WOLB AM Talk Radio. If you'd like to call in and weigh in on the conversation, you can dial 410-481-1010. That's 410-481-1010. How are you, Amelia?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing well, thank you.
Great, great. So what have you been up to this summer?
Well, let me just first say that I'm super excited about participating in this conversation, and I really liked the way you introduced it and framed it, both as a mother who has launched two young adult children and as a coach, because I think it's so vital for us to remember that these kinds of significant life changes, they don't happen overnight. It's really a process. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a letting go. There's, you know, the sense of loss that things are different. And then sometimes there's that murky, muddy, in-between place where things aren't quite sorted out. And then there's new beginnings. So I'm really excited to be here.
Okay. Okay. And let's talk a bit about your work as a life coach. Have you had to work with some parents that, you know, are at this point where they've poured their hearts and their life into rearing these children, and now they're ready to go, and now the parents are left with, well, what do I do next? Have you encountered that in your work at True Partner?
I have. And, you know, I like to remind parents, you know, I've been at that point myself, mm-hmm. which, you know, both my training as a coach and my life experience, I think helps me serve and inspire my clients that, you know, it's not an end. It's a beginning and a new beginning. And it is such a exciting, rich, ripe time for the parents to spend more time on yourself and to, you know, take that time to figure out what is it that you really want? How do you want to contribute to the world? And, you know, when we have children or actively parenting children in the house, sometimes it's hard to have time to really focus on ourselves and figure out some of these questions and take those next steps. So, you know, this really is a great opportunity to create something wonderful for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, you know, I am just a naturally positive person. Mm-hmm. I can frame things in a positive way pretty much most of the time. So, you know, I don't want anyone to get me wrong, but I'm not saying that letting go is easy or it's all sunshine and rainbows. And that could be, you know, not just letting go of your kids. It's like even if you decide in your career that you want to make a pivot and move off into another direction, mm-hmm. or we all know how stressful job searches are. And if you were like me, I was out of the workforce for a while. I was a full-time parent, mm-hmm. and I went back into the workforce, and that can be a little tricky. So that's why, you know, as you said, in my coaching work, where it's really helpful to have someone to support you and guide you, give you ideas. And the best part of coaching is that everything that you learn in coaching, you can apply to all areas of your life, including parenting.
Sure, sure. Now, kind of shifting to your personal experience as a parent who has sent children off to college and maybe off to work, I don't know. Are your children finished college?
They are.
Oh, okay. Okay, so what were your biggest worries when you sent your first child off to college?
So just to give everyone perspective of where I am on this continuum, I have two young adult children. I have a son who just turned 23, mm-hmm. and I have a daughter who is soon to be 26. They both graduated from college, and they're both working, and they're still finding their way into, I call it their professional sweet spots that mm-hmm. they want. So they both live far away from me. One's in Boston, the other's in Spain.
Wow.
And I have a great relationship with both of them. But back when they were leaving for college, my daughter is the oldest, and I was worried about the uncertainty of it all. You know, would she be okay? Did we make the right choice? How will she be different? How will this impact our family?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
And with my son, it was a little different.
Okay.
So I was worried about different things with my son because, you know, like all of us, our kids are not the same, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
My son is very extroverted. He loves being around people 24/7 if he has his own way. And he has ADD. So my worries for him were about choices that he would make about social distractions. You know, would he get his schoolwork done?
Mm-hmm.
Would he be able, you know, how would he handle his new freedom and temptations regarding things like alcohol, mm-hmm. girls, mm-hmm. things like that? So I had very different concerns with both kids.
Right. And so, and I was going to circle back and ask you, did you have different concerns because one was a boy, one was a girl?
Well, in my case, it's more personality type
okay.
versus gender.
Okay.
My daughter is very independent. She's just an interesting mix of, she's not really a typical first child, but the way she takes risks is different than my son. The way she takes risks is she went to school in Scotland all 4 years. So she went to school internationally. She's the one who lives in Spain. She teaches English in Spain. She's currently in Iceland because she's on summer break. She's working on a farm in Iceland. I mean, she just has the ability to put herself anywhere and work it out. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's just really curious how different each of our children are.
Okay. Now, do you think that you would handle it things differently now that you're on the other side? Anything, you know, you found yourself doing that, you know, you realize, oh, that probably wasn't a good idea. Like, I called her too much or called him, whatever, too much. Right. Or I was asking too many questions or anything like that. Or
Those are great, great, great questions, Carol. You know, before she went away, I had a plan that I wanted. It's like, okay, Catherine, let's check in every 2 weeks. We can Skype, and we'll just make it a regular thing. And that didn't work out.
Oh, really? Even 2 weeks didn't work out?
Oh, my gosh. This is the girl that went far away, said she was never homesick. So I guess tips I could give the listeners is it wasn't personal.
Sure.
And I was happy mm-hmm. that she was happy and content where she was.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she didn't want to check back with me every 2 weeks, that was for me.
Right, right.
Not for her, right? It was a sign that she was really in the right place, doing the right thing.
Okay.
So perhaps a better parenting strategy would have been to ask her, you know, Catherine, so I would like to stay in touch. You're going far away. You know, what would work for you? How do you want to stay in touch versus me saying, okay, Catherine, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of said, yeah, 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 and then she didn't do it.
Okay. All right.
So maybe that's my one, you know, that's one example of something to do differently is, and it's tricky as a parent, you know, we know our children so well,
mm-hmm.
and yet we don't. You
sure.
know, they're changing and growing, and, you know, in theory, we want to treat them like the young adults that they are, and we know all the ways they act like goofy teenagers,
sure.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I think that trying to treat them as you would other adults
mm-hmm.
where appropriate, like, you know, asking my daughter, so I'd really like to stay in touch. How would that work best for you
mm-hmm.
versus trying to mandate, okay, let's do this, this, and this.
Sure.
I think that's good advice.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. Now, let me talk to Linda for a little bit. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Well, how are you, Carol and Amelia? Good afternoon.
I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah, so what are you up to these days?
Well, I have a recent high school graduate soon to be attending college, and so it's been a little bit hectic, and we have about three and a half weeks before he leaves to go to college in Indiana.
Okay.
And but I personally just came off of a vacation. So
okay. So you're pretty comfortable right now, not running around, hitting Target and Bed Bath and Beyond and all that stuff.
I did go to Bed Bath and Beyond yesterday, but I'm going to stay in Amelia's light and keep it real.
Okay.
And which I appreciate her words so much because I think a part of our battle is that we're all facing sort of a fallacy of that this transition is going to be easy. We're all facing, you know, and people, we're facing other people's truths and what they say as opposed to the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that vein, I'm going to say that the Bed Bath & Beyond was a little bit overwhelming.
Okay.
Last night, and, you know, I got the discount coupon and left.
Oh. Okay.
But I'm just as thrilled as I can be to be here today because the two things that you've already both emphasized are, I think, are really key, is that you don't make this transition from June through August of the child's senior year going into college. You make it over a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You have to grow your child to be at this point,
sure.
right? So the thing that you started off with are things that I used a lot in my practice and dealing with parents, is that you have to teach self-advocacy, that sense of independence, that sense of confidence
mm-hmm.
from early ages. And then to piggyback on what Amelia says, this is not easy. No one gives you a manual to tell you where on the continuum you should be,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And your child, as Amelia just said, is changing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if you knew them at 14, now that they're suddenly saying, well, you know, all those years they might have said, I don't want to go to a faraway college. And then all of a sudden they go to a faraway college. So you have to, even when you think you have them down, you don't really have them down.
Right.
Because they're evolving and changing the same way that you're evolving and changing.
Mm-hmm. So what's something big you're thinking about, or is there anything that you're worrying about in terms of him leaving?
I guess the issues are pretty much mine. It's just the normal part of saying goodbye that everybody else is doing, you know. I'm no different. I'm a mom first.
Right.
And the thought of going a little bit farther away than I would have anticipated is a bit of a challenge for me. Mm-hmm. And third, if I'm honest, I'll say that, you know, I think the events that are happening in the country right now make me a little bit more uneasy.
Yes.
About the transition.
Yeah, I would say that's weighing on my mind as well. It really is. So now in your work, are the worries that parents are expressing any different from yours? Linda, I'll ask
you. Again, it's the how well do you let go? And are you one of those parents that I get a lot of too much or too little, right? People that are like writing their kids' papers in college.
Oh, gosh.
And calling up deans and arguing with professors about grades from their college kids, or the people who assume that once they get to be, you know, a college freshman, they're going to do everything independently on their own without any input from you and perfectly. So I get a lot of that. And then I also get parents who really want to control, like, majors, and they want every bit of information that they can get from the school. And so I sort of meet the opposite ends of the continuum. And then I, you know, working a lot to sort of get them to see that the best place to be is oftentimes like in the middle. And then again, to sort of echo Amelia, is that you know, a lot of this is getting to know yourself, but it's and how you were raised, but also like just sticking close to your child.
Right.
In terms of a healthy relationship, you know, not just like sticking close, you know, in a sort of a cloying way.
Sure. Now, do you have anything to add to that, Amelia?
Well, I'm just, you know, listening. It's like, I love this conversation. I think listening to parents at all phases of parenthood is so important. You know, listening to your peers that are going through the same thing, listening to and talking with people who have maybe been through some of this before, I think is really helpful. And, you know, as a parent, you know, I just tried to get the big stuff right. You know, as people, we're flawed just like everybody else. And it's been really reassuring to me that, you know, I think, you know, the people who tune in and want to get more information, who listen to your show, who come to talk to Linda, who work with you, Carol, and it's the people who want to get the big stuff right. And when you try to do your best and, you know, check off or hit or, you know, to the best of your ability, I'm really big on self-compassion with ourselves. And I think we model that for our kids, too. You know, once you don't have to be perfect. You know, do a decent, solid job, and things really turn out well. And I think of parenting, and for me, for young adults, it's even in some ways harder than letting go for high school, because like in college, it's college, but then after college, it's their professional adult lives.
Right.
But it's like a country, it's like a windy country road, right? You have ups and downs and curves and straightaways, and it's all good. And, you know, just meet your kids where you are. I loved what Linda said, and I've often said that, you know, our children change so fast, and as parents, we play catch-up, because they have to change first and internalize it, and then when they're ready to share it, you know, then we get on board. But just being there and being available, without being controlling seems to be a really good sweet spot.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I have rising seniors, and so that's certainly the balance I'm going to strike. I really, when I talk to, because I talk to some parents that seem to, like, pride themselves on, oh, I can't wait till they get out of here, yes, you know, great, and whatever, I'm not going to, like, they're not going to miss them and whatever, and I'm like, well, yeah, I absolutely want them to go to college and create their future, as the title says, but I'm just going to miss seeing their faces. Because
right.
I have, because as you said, Amelia, I have tried, I'm not perfect by any stretch, but I certainly have tried to get the big things right. I'm still going to try to fit in some more big things over the next year. But I've been trying to do that, and I think that I will not have covered everything, and there's just going to be some things that they're going to have to figure out, just like I did. That doesn't worry me as much, but it's just like the company just seeing their faces, saying hello or whatever. That's the kind of thing. But yeah, I run the gamut in terms of conversations with parents. But like I said, some that just like they're, I don't know if they're putting on a brave front or maybe that's how they feel, but yeah, I can't wait for them to get out. Yeah. This is what it's all about. And I'm glad to see them go. And
it's tricky, you know, in the senior year because of all of the psychological phenomenon that go on with the kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, in many ways, they are pushing out for independence.
Sure.
And they are becoming autonomous and independent people. And as such, you know, parents get a lot of pushback.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, teenagers can be snarky, and sometimes they can be sarcastic. And sometimes, you know, they're just
really?
So not so nice. And they can be rough.
Right.
And so, you know, and so to piggyback a little bit on what you said, like sometimes you might be, you know, someone put on the internet the other day on her Facebook page, hashtag 35 days and counting, to sort of signify when her child was going to leave. And because of, you know, some really obnoxious comment the child made. And, you know, so, I mean, some days I feel like, okay, it would be good to go on to the next phase. Some days I feel like what you just outlined, and man, I'm going to really miss that little sweet face every single day. And, you know, everything in the middle.
Right. Right. Yeah. I tell you.
I agree. And, you know, it's like both and, kind of like improv.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and, you know, yes, I did feel some relief in not dealing day to day to day.
Yes.
With some of the parenting challenges and seeing everything up close and personal there, I did feel a sense of relief. And at the same time, I missed them intensely.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that parents will learn to do when your kids go off to college, because they do come back quite frequently.
With laundry.
Well, you know, hopefully for, you know, breaks and holidays and all different reasons. But then you have to learn a whole new skill. And that's the skill of reattaching and then unattaching again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tricky, too.
Right.
So I think this is really good to talk about. There is a wide mix of emotions that you can feel kind of all at the same time.
Right. Right. Yeah. Now, Linda, I want to ask you, what are you hearing from rising college students or young adults about how they are perceiving this transition?
As you would expect, a lot of them are from pretty high-stakes educational environments. And I guess the number one thing that I hear is the parents not really wanting to let the child make major decisions, like, You know, you and I talked this whole year, and I talked a lot on the air about my process.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times the parents want to really, really pick the school. They want to really pick the major. They want to sort of dictate every single thing. And I get this through evidence. I mean, I talked to a lot of college administrators who told me that parents are calling and, you know, really, really trying to control the process, but the child is trying to start to make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I get from the kids. And two, you know, the kids they don't often talk to their parents about it, but they have their own anxieties and worries about going off, but they don't feel like, sometimes they don't feel like they can share that with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
A child from the environment, a middle-class environment in Washington, D.C. area, it is a big transition to go from your mom helping you, your mom driving you, to you have to make every single decision, you have to get every single piece of paper in yourself, or you have to call your mom about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of transition. They have to learn how to be money managers, students, without, organize their time. So they, too, share with me their fears and concerns about being able to make it.
Mm, okay.
So those are probably the top two.
Okay. Well,
and a lot of them, mm-hmm, just their siblings and, other kinds of related issues. They're, and going to feel like they're going to miss their parents.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Actually, let's get a perspective from a current college student, Zaria, who's on the show with me as well. As I said, she's a college sophomore. So, what are your thoughts on this transition, Zaria?
I agree with Linda. It is a significant step towards adulthood, and it's about a college is a time to really get to know yourself, focus on yourself, explore new things, and connect with students.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I get involved with my campus, so that kind of like helped me be distracted and to maintain and be on top of my stuff. It was a very big transition to balancing out with schoolwork and socializing. And it kind of helped me more independent. Like Linda said, managing your time, managing money, being on top of your stuff, and paying your own bills now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I really, was able to prioritize and be more responsible without my parents around.
And you mentioned something else very important, too, and that was getting involved in campus activities,
right,
and things as well. And that can kind of help. Linda, you talked about students missing home, missing siblings, missing parents, and all of that. And so, as they meet new people in, campus organizations and all of that, they can form friendships and actually, of course, be exposed to new perspectives and new things, new ideas, depending on, what the club or organization is. So that can help as well. And that's something that parents should make sure that their students take full advantage of, mm-hmm, encourage them to do that. Would you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Were you able to ask for help when you needed it on campus when you first got there?
Definitely. The administrators were able to help me out. Student ambassadors, I went to HBCU, so they were really helpful to me. They'd be like, do you need anything? They treat you like family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just surprised. I didn't think I was going to get all that at a college. So I was really, thankful for the people that I did connect with, the administrators, the faculty members. They were really helpful with me. They guided me through the way, tell me, this is the track that you need to be on, especially with my dean and my department. I'm really close with my dean. So, yeah, they're really looking out for me. And, if anything comes along with internships and stuff like that, they'll send me emails. Oh, hey, Zaria, I was just seeing if you would like to take this opportunity, And it's just like, wow, you're really thinking of me out of all the students on that campus. So it really is really a lot of love. So
that's great. And that's something parents and students, if they know a bit about their personality during the college search, that's something to kind of look at when you're thinking of a large college, a small intimate college, that type of experience, that she talked about, and just kind of depending on how much support students think they need or just want. That should factor into the college, the choice, which we talked about a couple of months ago, I guess, in May. I guess we talked about the big decision, and Linda, you were part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Amelia, how does this life transition compare to others that you frequently encounter in your work?
That's a great question. I'm maybe it's part of my training and just skill set as a coach. You know, I see patterns and similarities everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone's making a change in their life, such as, you know, going from, I'll just say, a stay-at-home parent back into the workforce, you know, it's a process. And it takes time. And just like Zaria said with her college, when you create structure for yourself, and I heard her creating structure through the clubs and organization, through her department dean, probably in her dorm and on, you know, her floor in her dorm. I mean, there's so many different ways that colleges create structure for the young adults so that they can have controlled independence. You know, mm-hmm. they're not just going out into the world. They're going to a college environment. And the work that I do as a coach, that's a lot of what I do. I create a structure. I create a structure to help people reach their goals. And some people need help in figuring out their goals or believing that they can achieve them because it's like, oh, yeah, well, that's okay for everybody else, but you know, I'm special that way that I'm just going to be confused.
Mm-hmm,
maybe,
mm-hmm.
maybe not. But just like college can help a student get to know I really loved how Zaria, you know, said, you know, get to know yourself better, focus on yourself, learn what your strengths are, learn how you want to be in the world through work. That's a lot of the same kind of work I do in my coaching practice, help people really see their strengths and learn to understand and work with, you know, those inner hurdles that get in our way, those parts of our brain that tell us that we can't do something or that, you know, that's not for us.
Right.
Because with coaching, it's very, just like college, it's very future focused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you want to accomplish for yourself? And just like college, hopefully, you know, colleges that have a lot of support and resources, a coach can also be someone to provide support and resources.
Okay. Now, I want to kind of pivot to another area, and that is safety and, you know, how much should parents be worried? Or should they be worried? And Linda, you alluded a little bit to that, and I expressed that as well. So I'll start with you. Should parents be worried, or is the college campus the safest place to be?
Generally, you know, it's no less safe than any other place, and it can be a haven from you know, high crime, but that doesn't mean it's not crime-free.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means that certain things, for example, like physical abuse and sexual assault, are often not handled by external outside police. They're handled internally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a whole nother show, obviously, about sexual abuse and rape. But, you know, it's handled in entirely different processes, and the child may or may not be, you know, prone to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You add that with the alcohol that is pretty widely available, and it's understandable that you see some of the problems that you see.
Right.
Most campuses that I toured last year, they have ways to try to make this child be more safe and feel more safe. One, they have, like, their rides at night,
mm-hmm.
their safety buttons. There's places that you can call to get help when you need it, safety-wise. And they, you know, they try to make it safer.
Yeah, and also, I was going to say, not only physically, also, you know, mental health support as
right.
well.
Right, I mean, you know, mostly every campus that I encountered was beefing up their mental health staff because that's the one area where many colleges are, you know, realizing that they have more depression, anxiety, and just general non-clinical adjustment issues mm-hmm. for kids coming into college mm-hmm. than ever before. And so, you know, there are places, and they outline them to you during orientation where you can go. I just recently attended the orientation at Indiana University. They had a whole segment on physical and mental safety and well-being.
Okay.
And they had separate sessions for the parents, and they had sessions for the students.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think by and large they're safe, but I do think that one of the pushes for independence is that the young adult must learn to be aware of what's around them.
Mm-hmm.
They must be aware of and embrace the fact that they're going to have to exercise some self-care measures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's males and females. We talk a lot about females, but that goes for males and females.
That's true. Yeah. That's
true. And, you know, an awareness of the fact that a college is just a part of the larger universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the same forces that might take place, like racism and sexism, those forces that occur outside of the college campus occur within the walls of the college campus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly true.
And to know, you know, one of the things that I talk to young adults about is to know when to go to your parents or other adults. Like, yes. Go before it's a raging wildfire.
Sure.
You know, call your mom and say, look, this happened. I'd like to get some advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is very important. I think what Amelia talked about at the top of the show in terms of kind of working together to figure out what that communication plan is, doing it together as opposed to forcing it on them, will make mm-hmm. them feel more comfortable as though they want to come and talk and share and get your advice on things, as opposed to, you know, if you're calling and texting, you know, every day and all of that. I mean, which, frankly, I know people that are doing that and their children are in middle school and high school. And I'm kind of like, tell me when you get home, because, you know, they'll get a chance to process and what's important and what's not. And then, you know, we'll talk about it when you get home. But
well, and one of the things that I'm learning to do in the transition, Carol, is to not judge, not critique. Like mm-hmm. if my child comes to me and he said he did something exercise wise a couple of weeks ago that I just thought was probably not wise.
Sure.
But I didn't say anything.
Right.
You know, and that just starting to, I was like, oh, okay. Just sort of acquiescing to what happened and just sort of give him the autonomy to process it himself.
Sure.
I mean, I presume the reason that he was telling me was that he knew it wasn't all that wise.
Right.
And that he probably shouldn't have done it. But, you know, just for me to suppress that, why did you do that? You know?
Right.
What on earth were you thinking?
Right, right.
It took a lot, but I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Linda, I was thinking the same thing as I was listening to the conversation, that when you are there to hear your kids
mm-hmm.
and best as we can, not be judgmental, guide them, let, you know, give them time to process it and figure it out, you know, it also opens the door because, you know, the parents, as parents, you know, they love and respect us so much, even if they don't act like it all the time,
mm-hmm.
we are still their parents.
Right.
And if they can come to us and talk about hard things
mm-hmm.
without us shaming them or, you know, all the different things we can do,
mm-hmm.
I think that goes a long way to what you were talking about, safety, because kids are going to see... Most kids are going to see a lot more things in college than perhaps they've seen in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have, you know, a solid sense of self, self-esteem, and, you know, we all learn by trial and error, and, you know, some kids push boundaries more than others, but to keep that connection, when you were talking about, you know, we've been talking about keeping that connection, that line of connection open with your child,
mm-hmm.
then... You know, they do see us as a source of knowledge. You know that funny line that people say that, you know, once their kids go off to college, all of a sudden their parents become so much smarter.
Right.
How does that happen?
Right. Right. But something you talked about there about allowing children, and this is not just high school children, students, but, you know, younger children as well, allowing them to make mistakes, make decisions, fail, and all of that is also really important in helping them to build up resilience and also
right.
to understand themselves and be able to identify when, okay, whoa, I'm in over my head, I need some help, I need help from mom or dad, or I need to go see a counselor here on campus. And so I bring that up because there's this phenomenon, Generation Snowflake, that, you know, they've been talking about for the last couple of years, where they're kind of referring to children as snowflakes, and it's in the dictionary, even has made the dictionary, and they call them young adults who are viewed as being less resilient and more prone to offense than previous generations. Like they're, you know, they really take offense at things that happen or don't happen for them, and they feel cheated, or they don't think things are fair. And then it also is used sometimes to refer to children who were raised by parents who kind of have just given this inflated sense of uniqueness or importance. And so, you know, when you do that and you go out into the real world and find out that, well, there are a whole bunch of other kids out here at college or whatever, and their parents think they're pretty cool too, so you're not the center of the universe, then sometimes children or they have a hard time dealing with that reality as well. Have you heard about that, the Generation Snowflake label?
Yes.
Amelia. Yeah, Amelia, have you heard about that?
Go ahead, Amelia. I certainly have. Yes, yes, yes. Everybody gets a trophy because everybody's special.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do believe we all are unique and special and have gifts.
Yes.
And we also are so the same, you know, each of us, you know. But I've definitely heard that, and it's curious. I would be interested to hear what the two of you think, since my kids are a little older, in the school system, even when they were in elementary school, middle school, I saw what appeared to be a way kids acted.
Mm-hmm.
Who were my kids' ages and older versus
right.
younger.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I witnessed is, so my son was born in 1994, so kids who were born after that, in this particular high-performing, educated community, were that children were being tutored, say, in math, not because they needed help and it was remedial, but it's because their parents, this is elementary age, their parents wanted them to be three grade levels ahead or whatever.
So
I would be curious to hear with you and Linda whether you think the Generation Snowflake phenomenon is more prevalent in kids of a certain age and older. I just have anecdotal observations of the world, according to Amelia.
I mean, I have a practice in Chevy Chase and I treat adolescents. So obviously I see my share of people who have varying degrees of what success means and are willing to do a lot and push their child through a lot to get there. Honestly, I have some mixed feelings about this term. Because while I do think that there are people who are like this, I also think, in defense of parenting, there are a lot of demands and stressors on children that I don't necessarily think were there 20 years ago. And it's hard to, and also in defense of parents, and maybe this is a way that I try to always work with parents, is out of compassion.
Okay.
Because there is this difficulty in drawing the line. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard to say, to know when to say when. Especially, like if you're in an environment in a really high competitive school and you're surrounded by parents who are making certain decisions, who have a tutor for every class, not just to push them ahead, but so they could get A's. Or if you have your child take the class over the summer so that they can get an A in it during the year, to sort of preview it. Those are the kind of stressors that people are putting on their kids because they're like seeing the person next to them and their neighbors do the same thing. So while I'm not defending it, and while I think that there's a lot of unhealthy things that parents and children are doing in terms of just trying to get ahead, I am a compassionate about the pressures on parents. And, you know, one of the things that I joked about through the college process, and I said this to Carol when Carol started the process with her kids, is that you got to get some friends with some good sense around you who can, you know, help you with the balance a little bit, or who, you know, are outside of that group at your school that's, like, taking the SAT six times and really don't, they've, like, lost their perspective. So, you know, it's always just good to have those solid people or a person like a me to go say, you know, am I losing it or am I going too far? And also, listen to your kids. I mean, if your kid is telling you, I had someone come to me and they were like, you know, my kid's taking four math classes. And I said, you know, at the same time? Really? You know, okay, yeah, he's feeling stressed because he's taking four advanced math classes at the same time. So, you know, there's some common sense things, but I am just saying that it's this issue kind of works both ways with me, where I do think it's a phenomenon. I definitely do. I'm not trying to denigrate it. But I also think it's very, I have a lot of compassion for parents who don't necessarily know when to say when.
And that's where people like you and Amelia come in. So, yeah, I mean, you know, with what you were talking about, I kind of, it kind of comes to mind when, I think one of our sons were in fifth grade. And so, I don't know, we were at a game or something like that. And the mothers were talking about the science project and how much work it was and how they were. I was like, wow, really? You know, I'm thinking to myself, how hard they, and they admitted they were working on it. And I was like, wow, because I'm letting him do this on his own. I mean, this is what I'm thinking. And so, and I continued with that. And so then they turned it in. It wasn't like a science fair, but it was some kind of project. And so they turned it in, and so then when he came home, I wanted to see it. I wonder what he got, what grade he got on. I was like, wait, where's your project? Because I was, you know, I was new to the school, so I was thinking, you know, maybe I don't know how this game is played here, and maybe I'm letting my son down, kind of like what you were saying there, Linda. And so he came on home, and he was happy. I was like, oh, so, you know, you got a decent grade on it. Where is it? She put it up. She put it on display, and it was clearly his work. You know what I mean? So,
well, you know, when I've worked at various schools, as Carol knows, and one of the things we used to do behind closed doors is we used to joke about the fact that parents, oh, so-and-so's mother writes a really good paper.
And so, yeah. And so he, you know, I was, he was proud of himself. And like I said, she used that out of all these other projects. I don't know what they all looked like, but she took his, and he drew whatever diagrams and things like that. He drew them himself in pencil, I believe. And she, that's what she chose to display. This was an example of a good project. So,
and you know, you have to make decisions based on your family too, Carol, because what one family wants to do, the college process was very much like that for us. You know, some people don't have a budget in terms of college. They will pay whatever. But you need to be mindful of the fact that I think it puts more pressure on a kid if you pay for something you can't afford.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. That's an incredible weight on their shoulders.
I mean, being a Midwesterner myself, I just have this basic premise, psychology aside, that if you got to have a tutor for five classes, every class of your kids in, you're in the wrong school.
Right. Right. So I promised at the top of the show that I would share some tips both for parents who are on the brink of sending their children to college, and I also want to talk about the ones in the earlier years. Just want to tick off some of this we've talked about. But like for children in earlier years, they're not in high school yet, or maybe middle school, elementary school, some things to think about. And that is, send them away. Camp, mission trips, visits with relatives, things like that. Send them away to give them an opportunity to be around other people and make decisions for themselves and just operate within someone else's rules. Teach them problem-solving skills and let them make decisions and mistakes. Give them responsibility, that's of course within the household, outside, and teach them life skills. These are things you can do all along to prepare them for this big college transition. And then what I'm taking away from our discussion, and you all can and weigh in on this, is for parents to plan their next move. Not just in senior year, but be thinking about it. Are you going to return to work? Are you going to return to school? Are there some hobbies that you've been ignoring that you want to take up again? So kind of think about it. Even though your child's not out the door, just have that in the back of your mind. And of course, when the day comes or is coming very quickly, like 35 days and counting, you mentioned earlier, acknowledge there's some sadness and recognize that it will pass. And then remember that you have other relationships in your life, especially your marriage. If you're in a relationship, you're married, but your friends, your siblings, other people that maybe you haven't been able to connect with in the way you would want to because you've been very busy with your own family, your own children. And take the opportunity to revisit some conversations you've had around values, sex, alcohol, dating, spending, saving money, community service maybe. But revisit some of those conversations so that you won't be lecturing all at once when they leave. And as Amelia talked about, establish a communication plan and something that both of you can live with. Like way back in the old days when there were no cell phones, I called home on Wednesdays and Sundays. And this was and then I didn't even have a phone in my room at that point. So I had to go down the hall and call. But on those 2 days generally, and it really was no matter what, whether anything was going on, sometimes those were usually they were short calls because, as I said, I was in a different era. I was just a little more independent than some kids I'm seeing. And some that I saw then too. But and then, set up a support system for any health care needs, or at least make your child at a minimum aware of what's available for any health care needs. And both parent and student should take advantage of all the college and university parent communication and student communication because, they can join now. We have the social media groups and things like that, so that can help the students feel right at home when they get to college. And then just encourage students, as I already talked about this, to take advantage of all the resources. It's the college faculty, the staff, the residence hall personnel, the RAs and all of that. They can also direct you. And then, of course, the student organization, student government. You've got Greek letter organizations, and you have other types of clubs, professional clubs, hobby-based clubs, to take advantage of those. Anything else you ladies can think of? How about you, Amelia?
Well, I was thinking as we've been talking, and I made a few notes. I just love the way that couple of the common threads through our conversation mm-hmm. is to remember to be compassionate with both yourself and your child.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, and remember to try to have a balanced perspective. And
you know, this really is an opportunity for parent and child to be resilient, to try new things, mm-hmm. to have a new beginning, and still keep the old. So those are just my two cents.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Linda?
You know, one of the things that I've been reflecting on is just really trying to cherish the time that I have, you know, with my child remaining, and it's less than 30 days for me now. Well, I'm not counting, of course.
Right.
But to cherish the time, and actually I'm kind of looking forward to this little emerging person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what kind of a different kind of relationship. I'm like enjoying some of his more adult perspectives now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also, Carol, you said something earlier. You said, like, you're not going to get to it all. I realize I'm not going to get to it all.
Right.
And so I'm, like, trying to lay the foundations for things that I didn't get to.
Okay.
But mostly I'm trying to just, like, enjoy him while
sure.
he's still home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And start to begin anew with a different kind of perspective.
Okay. Okay. Well, now's an opportunity that you can share. Do you have anything coming up professionally that you might want to let our listeners know about? Or by all means, I'd love to have you direct them to your website so they can learn more about what you're doing. Amelia, how about you first?
Okay. I would invite all the listeners to send me an email if you would like to receive more information about the stages of transition that we all go through anytime we make a significant change, and to ask me any questions that you might have, because I'd love to, you know, start a conversation with you one-on-one, even though I really enjoy talking with Carol and Linda. And my email address is Amelia, A-M-E-L-I-A, at truepartner.org, spelled T-R-U, partner.org. And that's also the end of my email address is my website.
Okay.
A play on my last name.
Right. Okay. And how about you, Linda?
Two things. First of all, my website is drmcgeeandassociates.com. And two things that I'm looking forward to practice-wise this year is starting groups for girls with anxiety, teenage girls with anxiety, a sort of a coping tools and skills workshops over a course of 10 weeks.
Nice.
And also doing more educational consulting. And so I've gotten the certifications that I need to do more formal ed consulting. So I want to marry my diagnoses and testing with helping people find the right environment with their child.
Oh, wow, Linda. I am so glad to hear that, because I have been intending to have that conversation with you about whether you do that. So that's
yeah.
going to be great, because I'm sure that I will be able to refer some people to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate you all joining me today for the show. Zaria, thank you as well. I hope that our listeners got some pretty valuable information. And if you want any information about what I'm doing, you can visit GardnerParenting.com. That's GardnerParenting.com. Parenting.com. And I will have a new website coming up. I'll share that with you next month, and you can learn about some other things I have in the works. Thank you.
Thank you.